The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Shout out to our returning super producer, Mr. Max Williams, recently back from some adventures in the far west.
Who's that sneaking in the phones?
Jet lag.
Max. Jet lag.
Did you just make that song up, or is that a reference to something?
It's my sound cue.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Who's that sneaking in the phone?
It's Max!
And he's full of knowledge just for you right now. Here he comes. It's Max with the facts!
I've never, like, is this something that I should have noticed prior to just now? Or you're okay, well, geez, I feel like a real heel. A real heel. We're not talking about wrestling, though, today. It would have been a great segue if we were, because the heel is like the bad guy in wrestling. It's also that part of your foot that you're supposed to walk on, was heel to toe, right? So heel first. But we're talking about something else today. We're talking about noodles, or as I like to refer to them cheekily, nudes. But not those kind of nudes, not the ones that you send or don't send. Never send unsolicited. For the love of God, just don't do it.
I'd like to give a special shout out to every other fellow pseudo prepper or prepper light in the audience today. Ridiculous Historians, shout out if you as well have a secret stash of instant noodles. They have taken over my pantry, kind of like a dried version of kudzu in a nifty package with a variety of ingredients. Yeah, Japan has given the world so many cool inventions. I first learned about this story years ago when I was writing a neat little kids series called Stuff of Genius, which is an animated show about various inventors. We've been going through an inventor phase here on Ridiculous History.
This is who we are. We love inventors.
We love inventors. I wanted to note that this is not a case of an inventor who died at the hands of their own invention, but this is,
thank God,
yeah, one heck of a story. And it's probably one of my favorite inventor stories just because noodles are so ubiquitous, right? Ramen, you probably think of it here in the US as ramen, but there are so many brands. There's cup of noodle, there's all sorts of stuff. And today we're going to explore the story of how these came to be and why Momofuku Ando deserves all the accolades. You know, that's why there are those restaurants named after him. He's that big of a deal. You know, Momofuku in New York?
Those are fancy restaurants. There's like a bunch of them. I went to one that I think isn't there anymore. It's called Sam Bar, but the Momofuku Noodle Bar is still, I think, a pretty hot ticket. David Chang, yeah, and he also has a line of products that you can get, including very fancy instant noodles and this line of chili crisps, which I highly recommend. You can get like these. There's like a truffly one, chili crunch rather, a super spicy one and a regular one, and I got all three in there. Absolutely fantastic. And we are not sponsored by Momofuku, but you know, we're certainly down. I think we both like to cook and like a little spice. Yeah. Obviously, both like noodles. Ben, I want to posit something. We talked about inventors who were killed by their own inventions and mentioned that, of course, Momofuku Ando was not one of those tragic cases. But can you imagine if he was? Wouldn't that be the stuff of comic books? If he accidentally like deep fried himself into a cube of noodles and it ended up in a package going out with the rest of the products? It's grisly stuff.
There's an EC, there are several stories from EC Comics that have things very close to what you're describing. So in a way, there are already grisly comic book versions of that reality. And of course, I'm talking about stuff like Tales from the Crypt, Vault of Terror, and so on. But if we're talking ramen and not body horror, our story actually traces all the way back to 400 CE. This is when the first Chinese immigrants that we know about arrived in Japan. And over the centuries, as you know, mainland China and Japan didn't always get along, to put it very, very lightly and very high level. But there was a lot of cultural exchange going back and forth between these two communities because of their proximity. And Chinese immigrants introduced or popularized many things in Japanese culture, either directly or indirectly. We're talking about stuff like the art of papermaking, Buddhism, and of course, new kinds of food, especially the wheat noodle. A lot of this is coming from a wonderful little Mental Floss article by Michelle Debzak called A Brief History of Ramen. You know, Noel, if people saw the very first Chinese noodles that were served in Japan back then, they wouldn't think of them as modern day ramen. Instead, these things were called shina soba.
Yeah, and shina is a sort of antiquated Japanese word referring to China. And which kind of makes sense, I guess, phonetically speaking, shina, China. And soba is a term that's used to describe any noodle. And we know that today. Although soba, it kind of does tend to refer to a specific thickness of noodle. But I get a little kind of, not confused, but overwhelmed when it comes to all the different types of noodle. And I think, you know, soba noodles can come in various thickness. They really are just kind of like referred to as hand-pulled type noodles. There's a really great restaurant. There was, I don't know if it's around anymore, in Atlanta called Soba. But yeah, it was a term that at the time in ancient Japan was a staple food and was used to refer to all of those different types of noodles, specifically kind made with buckwheat.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I'm a yes, all noodles kind of guy. I have always, I've always tried to find the ramen shop in town. It's up there with quesadillas for me. And that's, you know, that's a real personal statement there. I'm burying my soul. So there are, when we ask about how this modern stuff comes about, the one that is widely accepted, now again, this is not dried noodles yet, just modern ramen. The one that's widely accepted starts in the early 20th century, 1910, in Tokyo, at a noodle shop called Rai Rai Ken.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I gotta say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details. This was a Chinese outfit. The cooks were Chinese, and they popularized ramen by serving the... Here, we'll describe it. I'm going to describe it like I'm doing a weird commercial, Max. Fresh hand-pulled wheat noodles in a salty broth, topped with roasted pork, fish cake, and nori. Buy one, get one free. No, they didn't do that. But these ingredients are still considered classic toppings today. You'll find them almost any ramen place you visit. This coincides with Japan becoming increasingly industrialized, which means now there's a growing urban workforce, and they need something that is quick to eat, that is inexpensive, and that is filling. Right? And it's just bonus points if it's also really tasty. So ramen checks all the boxes.
And noodles, these kinds of hand-pulled noodles that we're talking about, are so versatile. You can have, you know, a kind of drier stir-fry with some meat like you described. You can have something that's in a broth, which I guess typically would be more what you would refer to as a ramen or a noodle soup. But they're just great. You can have them chilled. You ever had chilled noodles? They're very big in Korea, I believe.
Yeah, I am. I'll still eat the chilled noodles. It makes a lot of sense when you're in an area where there's a hot, humid summer. I'm usually going to go hot noodles before, but in my doomsday pantry, I have right now like a 10-pack of the little cold noodle kits. And I know the kits are not the same as making it from scratch. But if you're ever in a Korean or Japanese restaurant that has cold noodles on the menu, give them a try and you're going to be surprised, promise. World War II brings a new ascendancy to ramen amid all the horrors and atrocities of this time period. There were a lot of food shortages. A lot of people had food insecurity, meaning they weren't sure where their next meal would be coming from. Street food vendors were outlawed by the Allied occupation, and this was a move to conserve rations. And this was actually a continuation of a move that had started during the war. So people overwhelmingly just bought ramen from food stalls, right? Until food stalls are outlawed. The only two ways left to get it are to make it at home or to find it on the black market. And this is a thing people might not know. Yeah, there was a black market of illegal food vendors. They were pretty common in Japan.
Well, and remember too, I mean, we're at a time where, yeah, there was food instability, but also a lot of the stuff wasn't shelf stable. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to your point about doomsday prepping or even just meal prepping or just trying to, you know, store up for the winter, it's very difficult to do because, as we know, if you hand pull these noodles, you have to have fresh ingredients, you have to have the know-how, and you have to have the facility to do it in, and you kind of got to eat them right away unless you dry them out, which, again, wasn't really something they'd quite cracked yet.
Yeah, yeah. I call it French fry rules. Right. French fries are not great unless they're fresh and they can be tricky to reheat them well, though it is possible. If you eat some ramen, right, just like pho, and then you put it in the fridge and you take it out later and attempt to reheat it with all the ingredients mixed together, it's just not going to, it's going to hit different. It's not going to be the same. And this is something people are, of course, aware of in even the dire times of World War II. Also, these illegal food vendors played a very important part in society because government rations wouldn't come on time. They could be weeks late. There was also decreased agricultural production, as during any conflict, right? See what's happening in Ukraine right now. And there might be simple human mismanagement of resources. I did not know this until doing some earlier research, but thousands and thousands of street food vendors were arrested for selling ramen after the war. And they were working for the Yakuza.
Yeah, that really does add a whole other layer to it, doesn't it, when you think about it? Yakuza being, of course, the infamous organization in Japan responsible for organized crime.
Or as a, this is a true story, folks. I'm not going to get too into the details, but one time I was in Japan and accidentally hung out with the owner of a karaoke bar or a bar that had karaoke. And we hung out until dawn, like until 7 a.m. something when he wanted to go to another place he owned. And I'm pretty sure that he was Yakuza. He said he worked in construction and sanitation and had a few interests in real estate. Nicest guy. But the Yakuza is, don't think of it the same way you would think of like the stereotypical mob. They're also really active in helping locals after disasters historically. So it makes sense that I'm not saying they're good guys. I'm just saying it makes sense that they would play a role in these black markets because they're seen as helping the locals, but they're, make no mistake, they're also making money off of this endeavor, right? It's not entirely charity. And that's why it's organized crime and not a nonprofit organization. This is maybe where we introduce the man of the hour, Noel, Mr. Momofuku Ando. What do we know about him?
Yeah, we do know a bit. He was born in Taiwan, which has always been kind of a tumultuous region in terms of geopolitics and in terms of governance. At the time, it was occupied by Japan. And then he moved in 1933 to Osaka. Obviously, Japan was very, very chaotic and torn apart by war. He was seeing some of the kinds of things you were describing, Ben, in terms of people buying noodles from stalls in these literal black markets. You know, these were markets where people were illegally selling things without the permission, I guess, of the government. The noodles at the time were made from wheat flour that was being donated by the U.S. In order to keep civilians from starving. But instead of making bread, which is what, you know, the U.S. would have, I guess, intended this to be used for, the Japanese were using it to make noodles. Bread wasn't really, it isn't really much of a common thing.
Yeah, it's not as common. You'll see it around, you know, in Sando's, in konbini stores or convenience stores. But yeah, it makes sense. You would take maybe this less common ingredient, and you would make something that felt more common to your experience. We have to really paint the scene with what Ando saw here. And again, that Stuff of Genius piece I mentioned, it was tough because that's an animated short. It's meant largely for children. So we had to skip over some of the really terrible things that Ando's experiencing. He's walking through Osaka, like you said. It's the day after the Japanese surrender to the Allied forces, and Osaka did escape the horrors of atomic bombs, but that didn't mean that it escaped everything. It had been bombed to heck and back. Office buildings, factories are destroyed. And Ando is thinking, what am I going to do? I have to find some kind of job. And that's where he comes across what you depicted earlier, Noel. There's a group of people who are in some rubble, standing by some rubble behind a train station, and they're lined up outside this guy's improvised ramen stall. And he says, what is going on? People are willing to go through this much pain and inconvenience and suffering for a simple bowl of ramen. And then he said, I get it now. Noodle soup is comfort food, and people are turning to ramen for comfort. And he thinks what's worse is that hunger is the biggest issue today. He even had a quote where he later said, peace will come to the world when all its people have enough to eat. And so his new mission becomes, and he's not a cook at this point, by the way, his new mission becomes figuring out how Japan can feed its entire post-war population.
Yeah, and he's thinking about this less like a cook and more like an innovator, or he's looking at it as a problem to solve. He knows that the ramen, the noodle soup, is a comfort and is nourishing, and also, again, that it is a kind of a taste of home. It is something that makes people feel a little bit of warmth and, you know, security in the face of all of this horrific adversity. So he comes up with kind of a list of things that need to be accomplished by his whatever, I guess, invention. He's trying to come up with sort of like a next level shelf stable version of ramen. So first and foremost, it has to taste good. And then secondly, in importance, probably first, honestly, is that it has to be non-perishable. It has to be able to be prepared quickly. He specifically dialed in less than 3 minutes, presumably because there's no time to waste, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it really was a calculation of, you know, maybe you don't have more than 3 minutes because you might be in a dangerous situation. It needs to be affordable, and it, of course, needs to be safe to eat and relatively healthy. We'll get into that part of it a little later.
Right. Well, what is safe and healthy, right? At this point, he's probably thinking something that won't give you food poisoning, something that won't make you sick, and will deliver calories, you know, to people who need energy. And he says, look, I also want people to be able to eat these at home so they don't have to go out in possibly dangerous areas, right? And wait like those poor folks by the rubble of the train station. So he builds a laboratory shed in his backyard, and you can see a reproduction of this at the Cup Noodles Museum in Japan. It's cool. I love Japanese museums. So, of course, like any other inventor, he doesn't have immediate success, right? He has the light bulb moment in his head, but then you get to the sweaty part, the practical application of the dream. It is not until 1958 when he hits on the thing that'll really change the game for his invention and therefore for the world. He's looking at his wife, Masoko, and she is frying tempura. And he goes, the oil takes the moisture out of what she's cooking. And then he says, hang on, fried dried noodles can be re-moisturized if you boil them in water. And he's sort of yes-anding himself, like any good improvisation game. He's going, yes, and seasoning powder or dehydrated toppings. Why not dehydrate everything? We could add those. We can make so many flavors. And he says, I'm going to go with chicken as my first flavor in this new age of noodle. Why chicken? That seems
he's
like
thinking
an interesting
globally,
choice.
Right?
Yeah, apparently he thought it was kind of, it had this American vibe, which is an interesting choice for 1958.
For sure. I mean, not only was he concerned with the American market, I think he was just concerned with food restrictions from various religions. He had a feeling that this would not only, you know, hit big in Japan and be a very functional thing, but across the world. And so he wanted to make sure there were no, you know, religious food or dietary restrictions that would prevent people from eating these. You know, Hindus can't eat beef and Muslims can't eat pork. But to his knowledge, and I believe to my knowledge as well, there aren't any religions that prohibit the consumption of chicken.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global. Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
And even though, you know, there's, I don't think a chicken's ever even been waved over this thing. It's more of just the perception of it. You know, This is a powdered seasoning blend that I maybe contained in the original days some sort of chicken essence. But
yeah, it's chicken flavor the way LaCroix, you know, lemon flavored. LaCroix I've always described as you're drinking it and then someone down the hall in another room whispers the name of the flavor.
Lemon.
And you go, I guess so. But anyway, this is big, right? And he has a lot of foresight. I love the point about religious taboos. And yes, of course, there are multiple belief systems that forbid the consumption of animal flesh in general. But he's not thinking about that. He's just like, what's the least objectionable thing? And so he lands on chicken. And he wants to make this accessible to everyone, but it might surprise a lot of us who have been ramen fans by necessity at some point in our lives, being very diplomatic there. Ramen, when it first came out, instant ramen was considered kind of a fancy thing. It was a little bit of a splurge to get it. It wasn't like you would see it today where you're thinking, I have $1.50, how many of these packs can I get?
sort of reminds me of like how microwaves were first perceived when they came out versus how they were perceived over time. You know, initially they were like the wave of the future, literally the microwave of the future. And like there were all these like, you know, cookbooks for making things in the microwave. And then it kind of just became this like, okay, the microwave is the last ditch effort to make something, you know, instant or reheat a leftover or something like that. There really is no microwave cooking per se. But yeah, it was the same deal. And it was also quite expensive. It was kind of a radical idea to do what he was doing. No one else had quite cracked that code yet. So it was around 35 yen or $1.85 when you adjust for inflation. Canada. And this also comes from that fabulous Mental Floss article, A Brief History of Ramen by Michelle Debkaz. And so this was really pricey, around 6 times, in fact, more expensive than standard noodles.
And so now Momofuku Endo has to go into the world of marketing. And he thinks, I have to sell that. I need hearts and minds, right? Converted to the Church of Instant Ramen. And so he says, I'm going to have tasting events. I'm going to take it directly to the public. And this is very successful. Chicken Ramen, C-H-I-K-I-N, catches on. And it blows every other competitor out of the water. It's one of the most ubiquitous foods in post-war Japan. The fact that it is so convenient to make, for a lot of people, that makes up for the cost. Prices eventually went down. It's an economy of scale. And I think this was also very smart of Momofuku because he could have just kept selling it at the same price point. And then as economy of scale kicked in and it cost him less to produce each unit, he could have pocketed the profits, but he didn't. He stuck by his guns because he wanted this to be affordable. So that I think speaks highly to his character. And we had some math here also from Mental Floss with the help of our friends over at Fast Company, Alisa Friedman, writing the surprising origin story of the iconic cup noodles. Here's what they did with the math. They said, now if you look at it, and we're pulling these from 2021 numbers, an average pack of ramen costs like a quarter. So if you ate it 3 times a day, every day for a year, you would only be spending $275 for food. Of course, also, as we'll find, you should not eat ramen 3 times a day for an entire year. Just don't. Unfortunately, it's not Christmas if it's every day, right?
No, yeah, it's got a whole lot of sodium in it. I think around nearly 2,000 milligrams of sodium in every, you know, one of those delectable fried squares of top ramen.
Yeah. Around this time, we see diversification of ramen. Different parts of the country start having their own styles of ramen, like tonkatsu, which is one of my favorites, which comes from Fukuoka. Obviously, we're not native Japanese speakers, folks. This region is at the center of Japan's pork industry. So it makes sense that they would make tonkatsu, which is, again, just delicious. There was this place in our old office called Tonton, and they had no right to be as good as they were. You get the
really solid, man. Ramen certainly, you know, had a big big pop in the last, you know, 10 years or so, kind of, you know, becoming first probably in places like New York and LA, kind of becoming a little more chic, you know, outside of just like the traditional kind of food stall type situation that are maybe family run, maybe, you know, been around longer generationally. But then kind of there are these more bespoke kind of ramen places like Tonton and, you know, of course, like Momofuku, that are all jumping off of that tradition, but then adding their own kind of take to it. And really, the broth is the magic. Like, if you, it takes time, you know, it takes time, effort, and know-how to really do it right. I mean, I think a traditional tonkatsu broth has to be boiled for over a day, sometimes even longer. There's actually a documentary about ramen that I saw on a plane recently. I'm going to have to look it up and see if I can find out what the name was. But, you know, when you boil these pig bones, you're essentially breaking down the marrow and the fat and all of the good stuff inside the bone to create this kind of cloudy, you know, umami rich broth that really is kind of the base of the flavor of the whole thing. And then usually I think a piece of pork belly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like an egg in there as well. That's cool.
Those eggs that are sort of marinated a little bit, like there's like a soft boiled egg that's sort of got almost a brownish quality because they marinate them in mirin and soy.
Yeah. And then also there's miso ramen. That would be an example of tare, the seasoning that you ladle into the bottom of the ramen bowl. I believe miso ramen comes from chefs in northern Hokkaido. They're the first ones to add miso to ramen as a way of fortifying one against the cold winters. And those winters are cold. I have a friend who actually grew up in a very far northern area of Japan. And one time, her contact lens case froze. It was that cold, Max. And so she said she was just going, she just went and decided she would take the morning off. So it makes sense. And we see similar innovations across the world in cold climates. But back to Ando. He's not done yet. Well, hold up. We, I think, off mic, folks, we have both been getting so into instant noodles right now that, Noel, I think we're going to have to take a noodle break. Do you want a break and go eat some noodles?
Yeah, just briefly. And then we'll come back with part two of the story of instant noodles. I think we got a little carried away with our noodle exuberance. And this one ended up being a little longer than we expected, but all good stuff. And so look forward to part two coming at you next time.
I love noodle exuberance. Noodle exuberance. Ah, what a great phrase. I love the term exuberant in general. That's why we exuberantly thank super producer Mr. Max Williams returning from his time abroad. Thanks, of course, also to guest super producer Tari Harrison, who pinch hitted for us. She also creates Ridiculous News. Check that show out. Who else?
Oh, Christopher Hasiotis here at Spirit, of course. Also a big fan of noodles. I was just in his town about a week ago, and he turned me on to a fantastic ramen shop.
He's a good dude. Thanks also to Eve's Jeffcoat. Thanks to our pal, Anna Hosnier. Thanks to Alex Williams, who composed the track you're probably hearing right now.
Who else? Anybody else?
I guess we could do Jonathan Strickland at the end.
Oh, and not to mention Jonathan Strickland, the quizster, a.k.a. Jonathan Noodleman. Hopefully we'll see you real soon. And we'll definitely see you next time.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.